Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the PBSC podcast. I'm Steve Moore. Mark Castleman is actually out of town this week, so I am doing things a little bit different this week. We're doing a solo podcast for me, so lucky you. You get to be tortured by me today. hope you're all up for that. It's great to be with all of you guys. We've got a kind of a unique episode today. I guess I should say I've got a unique episode today. With Mark being out of town, I thought it'd be a great opportunity to be able to talk about a really interesting recovery-oriented experience that I had recently that I think I may have mentioned on the podcast briefly a few weeks back, but I've had some time to reflect on it since, and so I wanted to discuss that today and some of the lessons that I learned. So as you can see from the episode title, this is episode 183, and I've titled it Clearing Away the Wreckage of Your Past, Recovery Lessons from a Metal Detecting Trip, or in this case, my metal detecting trip. So couple things about me. I do admittedly, I'm 40 years old this year, but I tend to like a lot of, I guess you could say, hobbies that are a little bit what most people would consider a little bit more past my age demographic. And one of those is I really enjoy metal detecting. I've gotten into that the last couple of years. As a kid, I always wanted to be Indiana Jones. I loved archaeology and the idea of, you know, having a gun and a whip and running around and finding cool things. And then I got older and realized that making money as an archaeologist was really hard and not as glamorous as I thought. So I pursued other things and ended up as a therapist. But I've always kind of had a passion for things like that. And many of you know who have listened to the podcast that my father, 26 or 27 years ago, passed away in a plane crash in Idaho. Which for those of you who are listening to out of the country is in the western part of the United States, and is one of the more rural areas of the states. And it's not too far north from me, several hours away from where I'm located. And you know, that was a huge kind of ground zero point for me in a lot of ways. It was obviously a huge traumatic event for me, but it represents a lot more than that for me, because that plane crash also represents kind of ground zero in a way of when the roots of my addiction began. My story kind of begins with the trauma that began there and the emotional isolation that followed, a story that I've told many times on the podcast before, so I won't today for sake of time. But a lot of the initial kind of origins, I guess you could say, or the origin story of my addiction began on a hillside up in Idaho. Back in 1996. And so being into this hobby, I first visited that plane crash fairly recently, only about 5 or 6 years ago. Again, it's not that far from me. But there had been various reasons over the years why I hadn't gone. I wasn't ready for it, probably. I was hesitant for probably other reasons, some of which we'll probably talk about today, because one of the things that I have learned in this experience is that timing is everything with those kind of things. But about 5 years ago, I went up there with my mom and my wife, and it was emotionally difficult in a lot of ways, but was also really interesting. And I brought back a lot of artifacts that had been discarded and not found when the initial wreckage had been cleaned up. And so it was a really interesting experience for me. And at the time, I had a very cheap metal detector. But about 9 months ago, I determined that I was going to do the first self-care trip I had ever taken alone. I never taken an extended trip alone, but I decided I talked to my wife about it. She thought it was a great idea. And I thought it would just be good for me on a lot of levels to get away from work, to be able to reflect and also to do some, you know, some of my own mental health work, you know, looking at my own trauma and my own things. And so something I've been doing for a long time, but it, you know, it continues to be ongoing. And I just decided I'd take this trip and see what would happen. So I planned out a week-long trip with nobody but me going up there alone. And this the crash site is located a good amount west, the better part of 5 miles west of a very remote, very small town, and was about 40 minutes away drive time from where I was staying in a rental property. And so the trip itself was interesting because it involved not just a lot of time up on the mountain, but also a lot of other stages that I'll talk about. I every day, essentially, I would go get up in the morning. I would do a little research about what area I was going to go up to. I'd done some mapping out of the area beforehand. I knew I had the GPS coordinates of the crash site. And every day I would go drive up there. I would work up there for between 5 and 8 hours, digging in the dirt, metal detecting, looking for things, you know, finding things, categorizing them. And then I would come home and to the rental property I was at. I'd take the 40-minute drive back, lots of thinking and contemplating time that I'll talk about here in a minute. And I would look things up on the internet with serial numbers and things on things that I would find and try to identify what I'd found. So it was a really interesting trip on a lot of levels. And I could do far more than a podcast about it, but there were some lessons that I learned on a mental health level that I wanted to share with our PBSC listeners, because this is obviously a really unique experience, but I want to relate it. You know, those of you who've listened to the podcast for any amount of time know that I'm kind of Mr. Analogy, and I draw parallels from real world things into the mental health or emotional world, because that's how my brain works. And I know a lot of your brains work that way too. So this podcast is going to talk a lot about a lot of good insights that I gained using some examples from that trip, because there were more experiences there than I could possibly share in a single podcast. But that's what I'm here to do, is just reflect a little bit on that today. And hopefully that will be of help to some of you, both be it addict or partners, because, you know, as we talk about trauma, as we talk about hard things that have impacted us or influenced the way that we see or experience the world, the relationships that we have, and the way that we show up in those relationships, be it around addiction or in other ways, hard events, traumatic events, whether they were within the relationship or whether they happened far before or outside of the relationship, they do impact how we show up in those relationships. And so that's something I wanted to get into a little bit today. And so keep in mind that this is going to be a podcast very much applicable to both addicts and partners. Sometimes we do oftentimes place a lot of focus through the lens of trauma, for example, on partners. But the reality is that whether it was active trauma, you know, like, again, hard life events that aren't always huge like a plane crash, but just difficult life events, abuse, hard relationships, other sorts of trauma, or whether it's more of a passive nature, maybe it was emotional neglect, maybe it was a lack of upbringing or understanding or insight or support or other things that one experienced. But you know, to quote Brené Brown, everybody experiences trauma. It's just a matter of how we experience it, where, and what we do with it. And so this is very much a universal discussion that I wanted to have with each of you today, kind of on a one-on-one level, with no pesky mark to get in the way. anyway, I know I'm actually really missing him. He's a huge part of this thing, and I definitely would not do this on a weekly basis solo, but I'm glad to be able to kind of do a solo trip with you guys today. So With that in mind, just a couple of thoughts that come to mind. So the first thing that I found to be kind of profound, at least for me on this trip, was that, you know, quote unquote, what I call scanning the surface, sometimes bring insights about what is below the surface. And sometimes what is below the surface can provide clues and lead us to things that are on the surface. So what one of the things that happened while I was up on this trip is that in addition to knowing where I am, that knowing that I'm in the right place because of the GPS coordinates that I had, there are signs of the plane crash still there 27 years after the fact. It's located in a very remote area on, you know, government-owned land in the middle of nowhere. There are no trees in this particular area. It's just kind of grassy, weedy fields. And but if you look closely, when you're by the side of the crash, especially on one side of it, there are still bits of broken glass that are very small, a lot of which have been buried, but some that are still visible on the surface. And again, with it being so remote, you know, this is literally a third of a mile off of even the closest dirt road. It's very clear that this does not belong in the area that it's in, if you know what you're looking for. And so one of the telltale signs when you go to this site and you know you're in the right place is you will see still that glass sticks out from the rest of the train. It looks kind of like a broken windshield, but in a really big widespread pattern in the middle of nowhere. And so that's one of the things that I looked for. Well, as I was looking at those glass shards, that provided a valuable search pattern for where to begin some of the major metal detecting that I did. And I eventually formed a grid and did a lot of other things up there to keep things organized. But that was one of the first places that I started. I hadn't been there in about 5 years on this trip since the prior trip when I went this time alone. And so it was a great place to begin. As I metal detected there, I found lots of hits because that glass kind of led me where to look. However, later on, I believe it was the next day, as I was digging on some other metal detecting hits that were far away from the normal glass spread, I found one of the biggest pieces of plexiglass, the biggest piece of plexiglass from the plane that I've ever found. And glass obviously is not detectable as a metal, and this particular piece of glass is clear. It was laying on the surface, but under a little bit of a layer of dirt. And had I not had metal detecting finds there, I never would have found this glass piece. And the reason why I bring that up is because the same thing happens as we are doing, as we are going through this metaphorical, I guess you could say, digging process into our own wreckage, right? As we go back and examine our own emotional trauma, just like I'm examining the wreckage or the trauma, the physical trauma of something very tragic that happened almost 30 years ago. For me, there's a strong analogy and corollary to being up there on this mountain for a week alone doing this, to doing the emotional work around traumatic or hard things from our past. And as I look at that, and as I look at how we oftentimes categorize or look for things that need correcting from our own background or past, isn't that so applicable to how we oftentimes find things as we are on this journey of discovery within ourselves? Sometimes, for example, we as addicts, external behaviors are the thing that tell us that something is wrong, right? Oftentimes with partners, this applies as well. I can't tell you how many times over the 15 years I've been doing this professionally, where a spouse or an addict have come in and started seeing me, and the addict does not even disclose that he has an addiction or any sort of a past that way. But a wife will oftentimes say, I don't know what's going on, but something is wrong in this marriage. He acts differently now. He's more closed off. He's more distant. He emotionally flies off the handle for no apparent reason. This is not the same person I married. And I don't know what's going on, but everything in my gut's telling me something is off. In other words, I'm seeing signs on the surface that something is here, but I don't know what it is. Right? That is a common assertion that we oftentimes see. Sometimes that happens on even the addict side, right? Sometimes we're not even aware. When I first got into addiction, this was back in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, frankly, in most circles. And because I wasn't a therapist, I didn't even know this could be an addiction, right? And so I didn't even link this pornography problem or this issue around sexual compulsion with all these other emotional things that I was experiencing. I looked at them as two separate things. But as I started to examine that, the more I started to see, oh, there are things under the surface. Right, as I saw that metaphorical glass on the surface, those telltale signs, and the more I looked and was open to looking, the more I started to find things that were buried. And vice versa, right? The same thing also happens where oftentimes when we are working on emotional issues within recovery that are already identified, what do they lead us to? they lead us to other issues within the relationship that we may not have seen before, right? Sometimes we make links to other surface things that have been going on in the relationship for a long time that we would never have connected, right, to internal things. So there's this real pattern of this reciprocal relationship of when we spend the time engaging on either the inner level or the outer level, it oftentimes leads to the vice versa corollary. But that can only happen if we take the time to do that. And so that's one of the first things that I first noticed as I was on this trip or observed that I kind of learned from it. The next thing that came to mind for me was that I think a lot in my own recovery, even and I know I'm going to sound like a hypocrite by saying this, because I so often encourage clients to meditate and to have quiet time in their recovery where they're doing very little other than reflecting. And I admittedly am kind of poor at that. At least I have been for the last while. I think earlier on in recovery, I was much better with it. But in recent years, as life has gotten busier, I'm a co-owner of one business, our Dare to Connect program that Mark and I run together. We have a lot of other endeavors that we've been involved in. I own a second business, my private practice. We have a podcast we run. Life has just gotten progressively busier, and it's been easier and easier to live in a very noisy world, both in and out of recovery for me. And this trip was nothing but meditation. As I said before, I've never done a trip like this alone. And even though I did make phone calls to key people to kind of keep me grounded and to process and to just keep connected with people at times, like my wife on a daily basis and my mom a few times, obviously she has a lot of experience being up here and can relate to a lot of the things involved. That drive that I told you about, that 40-mile drive, is through a canyon and a national forest where you have absolutely no cell phone reception. And when I say no cell phone reception, I'm not talking about like low bars. I'm talking about your cell phone doesn't even recognize it has what service it's tied to. This is very in a very remote area. And so every day as I was driving both there and out, I was forced every day at a minimum to sit quietly with myself for the better part of an hour both ways. And not only that, but even when I was up on the mountain, even though I would have some music playing in my headphones or something, I was still just alone. It was just me, the mountain, and the wreckage. That's it. I did not see a single solitary person on the dirt road that leads out there the entire time I was there this particular trip. Not once in 7 days. That's a lot of time to be alone, especially in our crazy busy world. But it gave me some really awesome insights into how powerful that can be. Obviously, in the Dare to Connect program, and you can see it in the name, we talk all the time on this podcast about how the opposite of addiction is connection, and that is all true. But how often do we neglect the time or even create the space in our noisy, busy world to just reflect, to just be with ourselves, to allow our brain to be able to work on itself and to work through things on its own and to put things together? Do we find a balance of that? Because that was something that unintentionally this trip provided for me in a way that I did not anticipate. Because every day I would go and I would do this, I guess you could say the metaphorical hard work, right? I'm digging in the dirt. I'm finding things. I'm cataloging them. But then there was also this built-in quiet time to it. And if we drag that analogy into the real world of recovery, is each of you listening, whether you're an addict or a partner, are you taking the time to find a balance between what you are doing in terms of actively engaging in recovery, but also taking the time to reflect and to process? Because it's so easy to get away from that. And oftentimes, I think emotionally, our noisy world really lends itself to us being able to easily avoid that conveniently. A lot of the addicts that I work with, for example, really struggle with quiet time. They get really nervous or really antsy when I ask them to do things like meditate, because they're not used to having a quiet mind or practicing that. They're so used to looking to escape or to other stimuli to keep their brain from having to look inward. They're always looking outward because they don't like what they see inside. And so that inner reflective time, whether it's around trauma or other issues, brings about insights. I learned things from that quiet time about myself and what my thoughts were around that whole traumatic event of losing my dad that I wouldn't have gotten any other way, that I would never have gotten through processing it through with a therapist. Not that we don't recommend that, because obviously we do, that I would never have even gotten in participating in the Dare to Connect program, which we strongly recommend that you all do, that only came as in tandem with those other things because I allowed for that quiet time in that space. So that was huge for me. So it's important when we are engaging in this recovery process. Yes, guys, we need to be connecting all the time with therapists, sponsors, support systems, Dare to Connect programs, right? 12-step groups, all of the, this connection is so critical and vital in having that support system. But it is also important that we're taking structured, again, not isolating or avoidant time with ourselves, but structured, quiet, reflective time where we can look back on what's going on with us, what's happening with us, the changes that happen over time, right? Being able to connect with those things. Okay. So that's really critical. One last thing I would say about that is one of the things that allowed me to do was I was able to, as I was doing this reflection, was reflect on how this trip was for me 5 years ago versus this time around and the nuances and the changes that have happened in me, the emotional responses that I had each day versus the ones that I had during the fairly short trip I took before, right? Those were all things that helped me to see different areas of what we call post-traumatic growth or growth following trauma that I hadn't necessarily seen to a full degree, which we're going to talk about in a minute. So anyway, that's all I'll say about that. But that was the next lesson that I pulled from this. Moving on, one thing that I will say about this is that this was for me, and I know we're getting close to wrapping up on time here, but for me on this trip, I am somebody I have found that for me, exploring the physical roots or the, I call them physical avatars that are linked to my story, my past, whether it's trauma or good events, happy events, sad events, grounding with physical, tangible things for me is very healing. I'm not sure why that is. My mom has expressed that she works, her brain kind of works that same way. And when I do recovery work, whether it's in Dare to Connect or with individual clients, when I'm working with clients, we will oftentimes, for example, with addicts, we work on them building out a physical toolbox of tangible things that they can hold, touch, hear, taste, smell, that can help to ground them in the recovery process in different ways. It's a discussion for another time, but I find that that really resonates for me. Getting up into this crash site for me, getting and digging in the dirt, feeling pieces of the plane wreckage, coming across the different artifacts that I found, really was powerful for me. But I recognize, and I want to make sure that I stayed on here, that is, I think, would be a powerful experience for anybody. But that we're not, all of us are not in the right space or headspace, or it may not be the right timing for us to necessarily do that. And so even though that can be incredibly powerful, it is something I'd recommend that everybody listening to this podcast consider, because it has brought healing and insight for me in ways that other things couldn't. But also with the caution of, while you're considering that, make sure that you are careful with yourself about doing that. I have two siblings, and one is very much interested in doing something similar to what I've done with this. Another one has very little interest because it's a very difficult subject for her still. And that's okay. There's not a right or a wrong to navigate this. It is, I think it's about, and I really honor both of their choices and perspectives on it, because they're recognizing where they're at in that process and what would be helpful for them and what might be actually hard or even possibly damaging. I mentioned this because I've told several groups about this, and I've actually had a couple of clients who have actually gone out and done similar things, one of which actually went and saw a plane crash site from a relative of theirs and did the same experience. And thankfully, it was a really good one. But it is something to kind of just consider about, you know, the pros and the cons before you go and do something like that. So I'll just throw that out there. But one thing that I did learn from that, that I found that provides some powerful insight, because engaging with these physical things can, again, bring... engaging with those physical objects can teach valuable emotional lessons. One of the things that I was privileged to find on this trip that was really amazing, and I know this is a podcast or otherwise I'd show it to you, is actually the back of the main navigational compass that sat on the dashboard of the pilot of the plane. That's a pretty incredible find. And the fact that it survived, and the fact that I was even able to identify it using the serial numbers and things on the back that thankfully hadn't tarnished because it's made of aircraft-grade aluminum, was an amazing find for me. And for me, what hit me with that, and I'll try to just explain this briefly, is that as I sat there holding this piece of this compass, what kind of hit me as I was sitting there is that here I am holding this broken compass, and how emblematic was this of of how this experience ended up impacting me, because as I got pulled into addiction as a result of this trauma and other issues that had happened in my life and would happen, as I got deeper and deeper into addiction, I literally ended up with a broken emotional compass. I'm not even talking about a moral compass, although one can make an argument for that too. Emotionally, I became so numb and so broken and so distant that I didn't even know what I was feeling at times. There were times where I remember engaging with my addiction and deliberately engaging with painful things because I wanted to just feel something, which sounds really dark and morbid for someone who may not be able to resonate with that. But I know many of the addicts and partners I work with can connect with something like that. And as I was able to reflect on that hard piece, my brain also was able to make some post-traumatic growth links for me as well, that just like I was holding this compass and observing it, there are now, 20 years later, there are newer, better, more amazing compasses out there, right? And I have the ability, I've actually put a bid on purchasing a working version of this compass to have in my office next to the broken one, because it's a powerful thing for me on an emotional level to be able to, and I draw a lot of analogies to that, but one of them is this idea that just like there's this broken compass and I now have this other one that could take its place if I were to ever fly a plane, I as an addict, I as a partner have the ability to heal, to either fix or repair my broken compass or to develop out new ones through the recovery process. I can get that sense of understanding, and I can resensitize to things as an addict in recovery, which I have been able to do gratefully. I can connect with things that I couldn't connect with before. Partners have the ability to be able to get back that sense of understanding and empathy for their spouse and break out of the crazy making and the gaslighting that has happened to them over time. They can heal from that, right? That's been a really powerful analogy for me. So those are all just kind of thoughts and feelings that I would share with you. Got lots more to say, but with that, but as I wrap up here on this solo podcast, appreciate you guys indulging me. One thing that I will mention is that whatever methods you choose to explore your past with, be on the lookout for opportunities of this concept that I've mentioned, this post-traumatic growth. Mark, when he's oftentimes on this podcast, one of the great sayings that he has is that when obstacles come into our path, and I know I'm kind of butchering his quote, but I do love what he says. That is for him, what his mentor taught him is, quote, that is when the teacher appears. And I really like that line, because what that teaches me is that when these difficult situations come up, when we have these hard experiences, it may not be the right time right after it happens or even in the moment, but at some point, being on the lookout for opportunities for post-traumatic growth, what can this situation teach me? What can I learn from this wreckage? As I reflect on this, on these hard, difficult, painful things, as I explore this, are there things that can be learned through reflection before I immediately jump into just fixing and getting rid of things and pulling the trauma out and all those other things that we do in recovery? Are there things that I can learn that are beneficial? What things have I learned? What things might I still learn as I continue to reflect on those hard things? These are all awesome, amazing questions. I've been able, obviously, guys, as I wrap up here, podcast can only do so much. I've been able to talk about this experience in a lot more in-depth ways and have plans to do so even more with some cool things that we're doing now in our Dare to Connect program for addict spouses and couples. If you have not checked out Dare to Connect, we would just implore you to please come do so. There's a 2-week free trial that we continue to offer with that so that you can try it. We are so confident you'll like it. Come give it 2 weeks with no obligation, no cost to you. Billing doesn't start for those first 2 weeks. It's not like we refund you after the 2 weeks if you don't like it. We don't even charge you for those first 2 weeks. We are so confident that you will like it, that you will find value in it wherever you're at in recovery. Come see what it's about. There is no other program on planet Earth like Dare to Connect, which is why we created it. For the cost of a couple of therapy sessions a month, we provide you with the better part of 30 hours of content from two therapists in active long-term recovery, bringing, you know, decades of experience in this process of both personal and professional recovery experience. We provide a support system of other people who are in the same trenches as you. You can come and interact and engage and learn and grow together, not just with us, but with all those invested in the program. You can find more information about that at daretoconnectnow.com. We'd love to have you guys come check that out. And as always, guys, if you have an topic or something you'd like addressed on the podcast, you're always welcome to go to our website for the podcast at pbscpodcast.com. And there is a contact form at the bottom of there where you can submit those things in. Again, everybody, thank you so much for letting us be a part of your recovery world. From both myself and Mark in absentia, we love you. We care about you. We wish you a great rest of your week. Have a great rest of the day. And we will talk to you next week. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye. Everything expressed on the PBSC podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.